We are now faced with the fact that tomorrow is today. We are confronted with the fierce urgency of now. In this unfolding conundrum of life and history, there is such a thing as being too late. This is no time for apathy or complacency. This is a time for vigorous and positive action. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious, a show that is created to give space where your voice, ideas, and informed opinions can be heard, appreciated, and debated. I'm your co-host, Michael Eric Owens, and I'm here with my main man,
DT.
DT in the house, and we are so excited. Man, we got a great show today.
I'm excited, man.
But you know what? Let's before we jump right into that, man, I have to reflect just for a moment on our last show. Man, that was, you know, it's almost, I want to say, kind of a oxymoron to say we had fun with it, man, because it was such a deep topic, right? But man, it was just so enlightening, man. I mean, Sarah was just awesome in her delivery and her commitment to her son, Sierra Pierce, and you know, look at our website, our Facebook page, and we got information about Sierra on there. We still need to solve his case, man. But that's been riding with me, man, all week, man. You know, talk about that.
We often forget, you know, those things that are happening or that have happened to other people. You know, the other things that have happened, you know, in the past, the Trayvon Martins, the Michael Brown. Once they aren't, you know, popular news anymore, you know, people tend to forget. But those families are still going through that struggle like it was the first day.
Absolutely.
And we have to be sensitive to that while also maintaining respect for the process.
Yeah, yeah.
Because obviously, you know, she was still going through a lot dealing with the whole situation.
And I mean, it's so legit because your point is, you know, everybody else moves on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the family doesn't move on, and to be sensitive, to be cognizant of that, and to still show love and support, man, although our lives have moved on and we will never be the same, because clearly Sierra and others have impacted our lives. Although our lives are not the same, we still move on, man. So just shout out to Sarah, man, and
really and, appreciate you coming.
Oh, man, that was beautiful, man. And a mother's love.
We couldn't have had a better first guest.
Oh, man.
I think we shared that with her.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And you know, Stacy with her poem, you know, that was wonderful. We want to get Stacy on the show, let her tell her story. I think it's a very important one that that we need to continue to discuss, man, coming up in a diverse area. In Oklahoma, and her observations coming from the white community, I think is real important for us, man. But just wanted to go back, DT, and man, I just rode with that all week long, man. Wonderful, wonderful. In the news, folks, 1 year after Michael Brown's death, we are faced with what we open up this show with, the fierce urgency of now. Man, did you have a chance to look at what's going on in Ferguson?
I did, man, and it's really disheartening to understand that those people are still in the healing process and still feeling all the same anger, all the same frustrations as they have been feeling since the death of Michael Brown and before.
Well, you know, how can we expect, and this is what was, again, I'm shocked by some of the media and the portrayal as if in 365 days you can solve problems that have been mounted and continue to grow for generations and generations and generations. But in a year's time, you're going to solve them, DT.
No.
Okay. You know, it took a long time for the culture to be created and police brutality. It took a long time for economic depressed blight community to be created, for high unemployment for the poor schools that are in Ferguson, that are reflected across the country in most inner cities. I mean, these are complex issues that, you know what, you ain't going to, just because you put a brother in charge of the police force or whatever and city council, whatever, you expect to solve these problems, man. They don't, you know what, the fierce urgency of now, it's, we can't wait another day, man. I mean, we saw anger.
Man, I think we can't waste another day of our time with these petty differences, man. I heard a story the other day. A lady was telling her story about being in the Walmart and her daughter was buying a baby doll. These are Caucasian woman and her daughter. And the little girl picked out a black doll. And so, you know, they're at the checkout line and the lady's looking at this woman's daughter with the black doll and she's asking the daughter, like, why did she pick that doll? Mm. And her mother's just looking at her like, are you serious, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the daughter's, you know, happy she picked out the black doll, and the mother is upset that this woman has pointed out that, you know, she picked out a black doll, mm-hmm. and she's a white woman. Obviously, that was the reason why. Mm. But, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, these people on Facebook are like, oh my gosh, you're so heroic to be able to stand up to that lady and let her know that she can choose any doll she wants to. Mm. Mm. But I'm thinking to myself, like, man, why is this even news?
Yeah.
Why are we still talking about this crap, man?
Yeah.
I cannot believe, like, that, you know, this is still the idea. And we've done all these beautiful things, man, build civilizations, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this is where we are in our time, that we're so disconnected with each other just based on skin color. And here we go again.
Man, it's just right down to the common denominator almost in this sense of, yeah, it, you know, race determining how we coexist with one another. And it's deep, man. And you know, like so many of my black and white and Latino brothers and sisters, like so many, DT, I would love to move beyond race, man. I would love to say, you know, everybody's created equal and we all have the same opportunity and access to, you know, the finer things in life. I would like to take, man, that would be comforting for me. But then I got pulled over by the cop, man. And then it reminded me of my black skin. You see what I'm saying? So even if I wanted to go into that fantasy world, the world itself is going to shock me back into reality and say, you know what? No, that's not true. You know, and so we have to, as you say, on this grassroots individual level, continue to deal with these issues in a very healthy way.
And that's right.
And not, you know, we can't put it to rest until we deal with it, man. Right. I mean, the problem is just too deep. It's generational, man. And I'll say what in a lot of people's opinion, what happened in Ferguson just, you know, the past few days, if they did not have the police presence out there, man, you know, here are these folks that want to assemble in peaceful, you know, in some type of peaceful gathering, honor Michael Brown. But you bring out this police force, man. And what does that do to a people that's already distrusting, that is in fear? That just agitates the whole situation. And then you put in a state of emergency.
Right. And now these street kids are, you know, ready to go to war with the police, not even understanding that that's a war that they cannot win. And, you know, it just fuels more that anger, that fire that's been burning there for so long. And, man, like you said, it's just a shame that what was supposed to be a peaceful protest, to be a peaceful situation, you know, involved with police officers, law enforcement, and changed the whole dynamic of the situation.
Well, if you protesting on one side and then you got this line of cops on the other side, Man, when we were growing up, you know, I probably date myself, man, but we were growing up, man. We draw a line, man. Don't cross that line. You know, you put something on your shoulder. Yeah, don't knock that shoulder. You know what I mean? I mean, you've already set the stage for confrontation. You know, if you come and you looking at me like, what move I'm going to make? I'm looking at you. Man, this is already created, and with what has become so volatile, right, you know, this issue, you can't do it, man. But let's talk for a minute, because Ferguson is no different than black communities across America, man. Let's talk about solutions to the problems. I mean, let's in your research, man, in your mind, what do you think needs to happen to start changing the tide in this thing we call police brutality and just injustice happening to these communities?
I think that I read a good article that made a good suggestion because of the disparity of white cops and the representation of the community being black or mostly mm-hmm. African-American mm-hmm. in Ferguson. That, you know, there's a natural disconnect there. Obviously, if the police are not interacting with the people in that community, if only it's when they're having an altercation with that law enforcement officer. So they don't really grow relationships or be able to get to know these people mm-hmm. on an individual level or be able to interact with them in the community. But you know, when it's on the other side of the law, that's the only time when they have a chance to interact with the police. So obviously that perception of what my experience is with a police officer is not a positive one. And so as a solution, I would suggest, you know, any police officer, any law enforcement out there who is trying to shake the mold of what people think of police officers nowadays, man, get in the community and make a difference. Be in the communities and build relationships with those people, because that's the only way that they're going to be able to trust. And that's the only way that you're going to be able to trust that when you go into those communities, you can feel safe and vice versa.
Man, I mean, you said a mouthful, man. It's about relationships. I don't care if you talk about police, if you're talking about trying to bring economic development in the community and you live outside the community. It's about relationships. You have to get to where the people are at. They have to see you as genuinely caring about their lives, about their community. And like you say, when the only interaction you have is number one, the visual is you beating down brothers, okay? Or my interaction is you harassing me, okay? Because pulling me over for no reason and then letting me go is harassment, okay? So that shapes my perception, and that's what you're saying. That shapes the perception, especially of a young person. I mean, but that requires a huge commitment. It's so much easier, brother.
Yeah, just said and done.
To just come in and just knock you upside the head. Mm-hmm. You know, just to be honest, it's easier for me to just come in and just enforce, because I can forget that I'm here to protect and serve, but I'm going to enforce my will and my position on you. That's status quo. But for me to sit down and be human with you, that requires for me to listen to you. That requires for me to, you might even be upset at me. That requires for me to go, you know what? You might be right. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And like you're saying, I understand that it's probably a lot easier, like you're saying, for a police officer to take the opposing position. But because we can't look at any police officer and say, okay, yeah, here comes a good one. And then when they see us in our communities and can say, okay, look, there goes a good black mm-hmm. young man. It's just like riding with people I know, man. Like, we'll be in the car together and we'll see a bunch of little kids, little black boys on, you know, walking down the street, you know, pants sagging, afro picking the hair, no shirt sometime. And then it's just that idea of what those kids are in your mind as opposed to what they really are, you know, to themselves. Is the difference, because I can automatically assume, you know, such and such about you before I get to know you. And we were those same kids, you know, walking down the street, just, you know, on a summer day, hot. We don't have a car, you know, how else are we going to get around, you know, yeah. bike or whatever yeah. the case may be. But It's like, man, you have to be real about who people are, because we have a lot more similarities than we do differences when it comes down to fundamentals. And so just to assume that because this little black kid is in this particular neighborhood dressed this certain way, that is thuggish. Yeah, he's thuggish, or that anything negative about him is just an automatic association just because of where you see him at and what he looks like.
Gangbanging.
And the same thing for when we see officers in our community who have, like you said, beat us down for so long. What do we think about police officers, whether or not we take the time to get to know them on an individual basis?
Man, it's crazy, man, because I'm going to tell you, the other day, man, I was coming out of the gas station, man, and this cop just waved at me, man. I was like, man, I didn't know how to deal with it, man. You know, I mean, it's funny though, right? I was like, man, dude, like, waved at me, man. So, you know, I just kind of put my hand up slowly, man, so he know I didn't have nothing with my hand. But man, it's crazy, right? Because I don't even know how to act now, man, because I'm so paranoid. Dude, listen, this is crazy, right? I was coming from a coffee shop, and I pulled my keys out my pocket and some fell out. I didn't know. This happened last week, and a cop was coming past, right? And he stopped. Man, I thought, man, this dude about to jack me, right? He said, oh, you dropped something. Oh, it might be important to you. Man, but you see, man, this is crazy, because all cops are not bad, man. You know, all cops are not trying to kill people, man. There's good cops out there. But the problem is, man, there's so every time you really have an encounter with one, it's negative. So anytime, man, dude waving at me and I'm tripping, right? I mean, he being nice. And I'm like,
you don't even know how to take it. Like, what is this about?
Yeah, I'm like, is this a setup or something, man? I'm a wave and I got, you know, drugs in my hand or something. You know,
gotcha.
You know, got white powder on my fingertips or something. But it's crazy though, right? But man, I don't, like you say, police departments, man. They got to do a better job, man. I'm going to put the onus on them. They got to do a better job getting out in the community. And I know they have programs and they working with young kids. And I appreciate that, man. But you got the OGs that are in the community, man. You got the folks that are in their early 30s, man. You got a generation that is afraid of you. And they're going to react out of fear. And that's what happened on Fox News. I was watching. They were saying, you know, these why they got their faces covered up. They don't want to be talking about Ferguson. They don't want their identities to be known. They are afraid of their identities being known. Okay, folks are being hauled off to jail, beat down, shot at. Of course, they're out there with their faces covered up. They're not out there because they want to do damage. Yeah, and when I hear this, brother, when I hear this idea of, for instance, when I hear this idea of, well, you know, violence, you know, is unacceptable. Man, there's violence everywhere. Midwest City is the fourth deadliest suburb in the United States. Just came out, made the top 10 list. Okay, violence everywhere. It's not just violence in Ferguson. We always want to highlight whenever we see some violence happening, when people are trying to peacefully protest. I heard them call thugs, agitators, all these things, man, that fly in the face of what you've talked about. How do we move toward collectively thinking about this issue and solving it? Because, man, there is really, culturally, we're different. Humanly, we're the same, man. I mean, if I need a new liver or something, man, I just want it to be a match.
Right.
I don't care if it's coming. You know, you understand. Right. Well, I want a black man. Hey, I want a black man liver.
I mean, who would do that? Nonsense, right, man? Right? Like, are you kidding me?
Exactly. Who would do that, right? I don't know if you saw the article, man. We deviating just for a little bit, and we're going to take a break here, but I don't know if you saw that article about the guy from Lowe's that the lady requested a white driver. So he on the way to deliver her whatever it was, he got a call, you can't do that delivery. he had been working for Lowe's like for over 10 years. And so he had to go back to the shop in a white driver. And so it made it all the way up through the management at Lowe's. And Lowe's was like, we have a non-discrimination, we have an inclusion policy, fired those people and got them out there. I don't want a black man bringing my items to my house. Who does that?
Who does that? Well, I hadn't heard about that story, actually.
It's online. Hey, we're going to be back here in a minute. Don't go nowhere.
Be back soon.
Be sure to share and like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. If you guys would like to email in questions, comments, or topics, you can reach me, DT at onemiconevoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at onemiconevoice.com.
Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Thank you for staying with us. And we're going to, DT, I want to deal with a topic that I think has a lot of people confused. Mm-hmm. And it almost seems like a separatist movement. And before I introduce the topic, I want to say that when we attach black to it, black power, or any type of association, I think people feel that it's in isolation. It is an exclusive movement. That's not the case. What I'm talking about is the Black Lives Matter movement. And we hear a lot of talk going around the country about Black Lives Matter. Well, it's created out of a quest to bring attention to the loss of black lives, not the loss of white lives, not the loss of Latino lives, the loss of black lives. It's a specific movement. And my in my eyes, I think the misconception comes when people try to associate black lives as if somehow it's saying that white lives and other lives don't matter.
And of course they do.
You know, every life matters.
Every life matters.
You know, I mean, nobody's going to argue. I don't want to see harm come to anyone. I don't care what race or ethnicity you are. But this idea of, you know, because I was asked a question, you know, what do people think about the black lives? You know, again, I can only speak for, you know, Michael Eric Owens. Mm-hmm. But, it's about bringing attention to specific problems in the black community, not problems in the white community. That's when people get up and say, well, black lives and white lives and all lives matter. That marginalizes the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Almost like if we put black on it, like you said, there needs to be a rebuttal to it being just exclusively black. That because for so long we've pretty much pinned down our thinking about who we are in the first place. And it's now that Black Lives Matter has come to reaffirm a positive sense of who black people are and that, you know, our lives do matter. And it's like, man, like you're saying, there happened to be this kind of back and forth about, you know, it not just being about black lives, but that all lives and that Latino lives and that white lives. And it's like, man, why cannot we have the what do you call privilege, mm-hmm. just to be who we are, man, to love our people and to show them that they can love themselves.
And to have a substantive discussion about problems that are affecting black people
Specifically, because if you look at any statistic, and you know, especially when it's dealing with law enforcement, it's dealing with police brutality, it's dealing with, you know, violence, we are portrayed as higher up in the percentages of that negative, you know, light. So
all of it,
man. Why not Black Lives Matter? You know, even though right now they're getting a lot of flack for the campaign trail disruptions. Fundamentally, Black Lives Matter was started to reaffirm Black life.
Yeah, and people. Well, first of all, that interrupting campaigns is ridiculous. Okay, there is a time and purpose for everything. I get the anger. I need the platform. I understand that you want to get this out there, but we, in my opinion. Okay, there's a time and a place, and if you want to move things forward, you have to be strategic about doing that. Not hating on them, I just don't think it works. I think it makes Black Lives Movement and suspect when you do that. Just right. My opinion.
And you know, though, some people though were not officially tied to the Black Lives
Absolutely.
Matter. Absolutely. And so you have this other side of the Black Lives Matter who are not really affiliated with the real, you know, structure of the whole movement. Who are going out and doing these things that are not officially, you know, approved by
Absolutely.
Or, you know, defended by, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement.
And that has always happened throughout history, man. You know, when there's a movement, I mean, even in the civil rights movement, you have like this internal counter movement that happens. Mm-hmm. You have folks that come along, they agree with what you do, but then all of a sudden they say, you know what? Nah, I want to do something different. Or there's a more of a militant aspect to it. The Black Power Movement was the same thing, right? You know, the Black Power Movement came out, black is beautiful. You know, black folks start loving their hair, loving their noses, and so forth, and loving the vernacular and the way they dressed and all of that. So we had this beautiful movement, but then you had the militant side that came out. It was like, we need our own country. We need our own, you know, folks was like, come on, realistically. So you always going to have, you know, you always going to have this sort of, you know, counter movement that's going to happen internally. And that's what you see with the Black Lives Movement. But we cannot discredit the movement because of the acts of others, man. And first of all, or second or third, I don't know, maybe on the fourth of all, I don't know. But get this, man. The reason why these things exist, black colleges exist because they wouldn't let us go to regular colleges. These black institutions exist because we were excluded from it. So to turn around and say, you know what, the Black Lives Movement or the black this is in opposition or saying that we don't matter. No, it was morphed out of the fact that we felt that we didn't matter.
Right.
You see. And so history, man, understanding through which these things have developed. And I'm happy for the Black Lives Matter movement, man, because we have specific issues that have been in plaguing the black community, man, all of my life.
Man, I heard one of my friends' Facebook. Well, I said heard. She wrote that part of being black is, I mean, part of life and day to day, just being black is stressful within itself. And I just speak highly to the attitude of most blacks here and around the world, that just our skin is causing us so much stress that it's that big of a deal. And I thought to myself, wow, that was pretty deep.
We talked about the psychological stress, man. I mean, that makes me sad, man, to hear that, man, because, you know, man, if you believe in the Creator, man, and God, He created us all, man. And to say that for some reason, because of the origin of our birth, we have to deal with something that others don't have to deal with, that's just not right, man. It's unfair. It's wrong. Mm-hmm. And to have to walk around simply because you are who you are. It's not that we did anything. Yeah, it's not like I robbed somebody. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I broke into a bank, man. You know, why is being black punitive? Mm-hmm. you know, simply because you live in who you are, man. And to want that to change, to have the aspirations for that to change, is in one vein. But in the other vein is what you say all the time. Why is this even a issue? Okay. And if we don't talk about it, oh man, the system is so designed, bruh. The system is so designed to work in a way that no one ever sees the mechanisms that wreck lives day to day.
Day to day.
You know. Man, I don't know if you want to say anything else about Black Lives, but there's a topic, man, that I want to jump into here just for a minute. You got anything else you want to say, DT?
Go ahead.
Man, Dr. Cornel West. I got to go there, man, for a minute. You know, he was arrested in Ferguson, right?
I don't know that.
Yeah, he was arrested, man. Matter of fact, they say this is the second time. Man, and you know, Cornel, you know, he from Tulsa, right?
The brothers. I didn't know Cornel was from Tulsa, man. I really like Cornel West, man.
See, we're going to have a real good discussion.
Growing up?
Yeah.
I did. Race
matters. I mean, you know, you can't, in my opinion, you can't dive into Black philosophical thought without going through certain, you know, you got to go back and go through W.E.B. Du Bois. You know, you can go through. Now, this is just my list. I know folks going to have different lists and folks going to get mad because I'm not going to name all some folks that they want me to. But Dr. John Hope Franklin, you got to go through him. He's from Oklahoma, man, from Rennersville. You got to go through, of course, Dr. King. Okay. And you got to go through Wes. You got to go through Michael Eric Dyson. You got to go through Michael Eric Owens. Oh, did I say that? No, I didn't say that. I'm tripping, right? But man, listen, West, man.
Let it be known.
Oh, and you got to go. Let's back up before you get to West.
Let it be known.
You got to go through Dr. Henry Louis Gates Jr.
Yeah, that's
got it. To go through him. That's Black royalty right there, folks. But let me say this. West is one of my intellectual mentors. I don't know if you've seen the article that I put out. That I shared that Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, which was a student of West, they're like boys, put out the article, The Death of Dr. West. Mm. And basically, his argument is that it was self-inflicted, you see, with his attack on the president and that's so forth. Himself. And man, I love Dr. West, man. I love Race Matters. I think is one of the most powerful, man, intuitive books on race and life in America, historically packed and just literally written in a way, man, that I think any reader can derive something from it, man. But I must say I've had problems with the way he has been attacking the president of the United States.
And like all of the news has told us that this is the most disrespected president of any time. And Watson, I also read something earlier today that, you know, in talking about race, is that if there is a problem, if Barack Obama faces a major problem in his presidency, that will be then tied to him being Black than anything else, because they'll say we can't elect another Black president because such. Whereas over time, you know, we've had all previous, you know, white presidents in office, and nothing of their betrayal, of nothing of their, you know, owning slaves, none of those things tie them back to the identity of whiteness than it does, you know, that individual giving themselves an opportunity to show people who they really are. And so I'm like, man, okay, that's kind of profound, because now we see that just by, you know, Barack being Black, you know, that's going to depict whether or not another Black will qualify to fill that position again.
Well, and it goes back, you're so correct. It goes back to what we said several shows ago, black people are seen as a group. Mm-hmm. Okay, they're viewed as a group. And so all of these, whether they're positive, but all of these negative characterizations of black people, the stereotypical way of looking at black people, is placed upon him. And he is judged by that. He's not judged because he is Barack Obama. He's judged because he is black. And what was associated with that is a certain level of stigma that the culture sees a black person as. You're so correct. And a white president, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, they're known for Bill Clinton, George W. Bush. Okay.
And their individual efforts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Clinton got. No, we won't go there.
He did not, he said.
Yeah. He did not do a couple of things. But, you know, hey, we won't go there. But anyway.
Stay focused.
Right. But anyway, man, you are so correct. And for Dr. West, man, I think he lost his way. You know, I think he is confused, and it's personal.
It is personal.
And it's played out on the world stage. And for him, man, I feel my heart goes out to him, man. It's hard for me to look at a brother that's made so many contributions like that and say, you know, he's done. He's finished. You know, the last bell has rung and it's time to move on. I'm hoping that he can redeem himself. He can come back. And I throw Tavis Smiley in the same vein, man. He was running around here, in my opinion, doing the same thing, man. I don't think his contributions, this is just my opinion. I respect what he's done on PBS and so forth, but clearly his contributions does not ascend to the height of Dr. West. And I think Dr. West has paid the ultimate price for his he has been just downright nasty.
Man, don't be a hater.
You know, I mean,
it can be a downfall.
I mean, it can be. And when pride comes in, you know, you feel you've been disrespected. Mm-hmm. When all that comes in, man, you got to take the high road, man. You just got to humble yourself and just move on.
Did Barack himself give Cornell any, you know, personal, like, you my boy, we going to make sure we keep this thing
they
tight.
They were close, man. Okay. Supposedly, and this is, again, this is nothing that I'm going to say now. I have any type of factual knowledge. But supposedly, Dr. West anticipated some level of participation in the president's cabinet. And you know, Wes has called himself the black prophet,
right?
You see, you know, and when you call yourself a prophet, you up there, you know. But I, again, his intellectual genius is deep, man. And it's unmatched in a lot of ways. I mean, the brother is extremely intelligent and, well read and so forth. And so, you know, whatever he called himself, you know, I'm not gonna get into that. But he considered himself the black prophet, and supposedly they had a little altercation, verbal one, at the White House. And it was basically like it wasn't the president and, you know, the academic scholar. It was brother to brother.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? You know, supposedly the president heard what was going on and pulled him off to the side and said, man, look, now this is what I'm going to say. If you my friend, man, don't be out there bashing me. If we boys, if you got something against me, call me.
Let me know.
Man, don't tread on me like that. If you love me and you my boy and you looking out for my interests, Don't put me out on Front Street like that. So supposedly, man, it was heated, man. And Wes was like, he talked to me basically like I was a punk. Hmm. Okay. And so all of that. And then the president was invited to the Black State of the Union with Tavis Smiley. He didn't come. He sent Michelle. Now, you can send Michelle anywhere you want to send her. Okay, I'll be honest with you. Michelle, we want you on one by one. You know what I mean? Hey, Michelle is a force in her own right. So the fact that you got Michelle, I would have been excited, but he was slighted mm-hmm. by that. He felt that, and also he felt that he should announce his campaign at the Black State of the Union instead of on the state capitol in Illinois. So yes, there has been a personal fallout between them that has played out in the public sphere. And for the most part, the president's been silent. Yeah. I ain't heard him say anything. Okay. He's been kind of busy though.
Yeah, people don't understand the task of a president, man. We expect these people to just jump into office and do everything that we want them to do, you know, based on what idea of what we think of. Yeah. What the presidency is. And like you're saying, man, this cat got other things to do than be sitting around at the Tavis Smiley dinner. You know, there's probably some really important other stuff going on.
He's trying to win the presidency of the United States. Man, what you're doing is important. I think the Black State of the Union, man, is an important event. I would love to make it there one day, man. I commend Brother Tavis for doing that. But it does not reach the same level as I'm about to be president of the United States. I have a good chance. I'm on the campaign trail. I'm sending my best. You know, I didn't send somebody on the lower end.
I'm sending my best.
You see what I'm saying? I'm hoping, DT, that there is a, man, just kind of a change in tone, man, with Dr. West, man. We need his voice. We need his leadership. You know, we need for him to be in the space where he has always been in, man, being a voice, not just for Black people, but for diversity and bringing people together. The voice, really, he's been a voice of love, man, and brotherhood. Yeah. And
I think that's what drew me to him early on, just getting to know who he was. And man.
He's
a powerful dude.
Yes. Wanting him to return. And what we're going to do right now, we're going to close with this topic. You know, I think as Black people, in some regards, we've done a disservice to our white and Latino Asian brothers and sisters. You remember that saying, it's a Black thing, you wouldn't understand it, okay? And our attitude of separatistness, you know, this idea that give us a Black nation, we have been in a lot of regards exclusive, not inclusive, and still in our community. I've heard people say, when I was partnering with the Juneteenth celebration, I heard people say, why in the world are you, why were our white people here at our Juneteenth celebration? I'm saying, what do you mean? This is a celebration for the United States. This is the official day at the end of slavery. Mm-hmm. Everyone should have knowledge of this. Everyone should celebrate the release of slaves, of bondage. And so we have had this attitude, DT. And so it has created a fear among white people to even talk about Black issues. Mm-hmm. You see, I don't want to, and you know, my white friend said, well, I don't want to say something wrong. I mean, we have some of them on eggshells, man. Mm-hmm. They want to talk to us. They want to express, but oftentimes, oh man, dude, racist, man.
Yeah, we can't wait to pull that out.
Oh man, he racist, man.
And that's the fear of the white.
You know, man, system mind. You know, I'm like, really, why don't you hear this person out, you know? Why don't you try to understand where they are at? If I didn't grow up, okay, if I didn't grow up in a, you know, with friends from all different backgrounds, I wouldn't understand. I wasn't exposed to it. I didn't have the experience. I might be ignorant. Being ignorant, folks, is not a bad thing. It means you just lack knowledge. You haven't learned that. Mm-hmm. And so I just think, man, talk for a minute, man, about your experiences and how you feel, man, that we have just alienated white people even from getting in the conversation with us.
Because we're so ready to, you know, like you said, pull the race card, call that person a racist, call that person a bigot, when in reality we do need to sit down and have this discussion. This is why you and I decided to go ahead and get the show started, so that we can open up these conversations that are difficult, these conversations that are hard, these conversations that make people feel, you know, uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, we're going to come to an understanding, and all of us are going to leave this conversation feeling better about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it's just like, man, you know, why not open up the floor to let, you know, somebody else in to your world and vice versa? You know, the thing about, we talked about white privilege on our last show, is that whites have kind of been excluded to having to relate to the black experience. You know, we don't have that choice as blacks because we're immersed in a white culture. But whites are exclusively privileged to not have to delve into the realities of what life is for lots of black people for here and around the world. And so, yeah, man, I think it's definitely important. I think it's definitely empowering for those people to be able to speak their mind in an open way and in a way that makes it feel safe for everybody to just be open and honest with each other, because that's the only way we're going to get any progress made, man. That's what I honestly believe.
Yeah, I mean, man, I almost passed around the offering plate, bro, because you were preaching right there, man. Seriously, you laid down some gems, man. I almost opened up the book. But no, brother, you serious, man. It is. You right. Unless we we got to get beyond this ego, this pride, you know, this silliness that no one can talk to us about our experience. Well, they might not have the same experience, but there's an observation. There's a perspective that they have on who we are and what we are. And oftentimes that perspective is wrong because it is based upon the wrong information. And if we don't have the conversation, but I can't tell you how many people have said to me, well, you're not like most blacks. And I said, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Basically, what they're saying is, you know, my experience with most blacks, okay, it's not like the experience I'm having with you, okay? And I tell them, no, I grew up in the inner city, man. I'm just like, I'm from around the way.
Yeah.
I'm just a dude, okay, that's draped in black skin. So no, I'm just like, the fact is, the experience that you've had with black people, you have inferred that to all black people. And in any race, there's good and bad, okay? There are talented and there are people that are dangerous in any race. And so I think what we need to do is to have a conversation that allows for our white brothers and sisters and Latino brothers and sisters, man. They too are saying, well, man, do I say this? Do I say that? Am I going to call you African-American? Am I going to call you black? People are upset if I say black. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, you know, it's confusing.
It is.
You know?
It is.
Man, it's like, man, schizophrenia or something, man. It's like, you know, how do I even talk about race? Okay. Well, I'm saying to you, you can talk about race on this show. I mean, this is a platform for you to share your thoughts. Nobody's going to attack you. Nobody's going to, you know, this is about learning. You learning from us and we learning from you.
I recently heard a story this guy was telling about. He was the coach of a baseball team, and he noticed that there was one kid in particular who had, you know, no money to pretty much buy supplies and the things he needed to be a good, you know, team player or whatever, need everything he needed for the games. And so this man went out of his way to donate, you know, a bag, some equipment, some cleats and everything like that, so the kid could be able to play. He saw great potential in this kid and wanted this kid to have an opportunity to go ahead and go to college and be able to play sports. And he felt like this would help this young man, you know, further his education and blah, blah, blah. So once word gets back to mom that, you know, he has accepted these supplies from the coach. She comes back, you know, furious. Hell no, we don't want your pity, you know, donations, and, you know, we don't accept gifts and things like that from white people. And it was just like, man, this guy, out of the, you know, what he thought was being kind and doing something generous, was then turned into a negative thing because the mother's pride got in the way of her understanding, you know, that this man was just trying to do something good for her son and had given her all the information, you know, as to why he done it. And still, you know, she's still having a negative point of view about it. And it's just like stuff like that, man. People, white people aren't necessarily able to do certain things either because of how they'll be perceived.
You know, I completely, man, agree with you. I'm taking this selfie right now. Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's a powerful story. But, you know, that's a powerful story, man. I mean, and it's so confusing to our white brothers and sisters, man, because they're trying to do something kind, man. And they're like, how do you look at this and make it grotesque, you see? And we got to do better, man, as black people. We have to do much better at accepting people, accepting where they are at. Listen to me, folks. Accepting where they are at and bringing them to a point where they can truly understand what, because you said it so powerfully, man, is that we live in a society that the dominant culture, which is white, we live in that society. We experience that society. But for many, they don't have to experience minority society or culture. They don't have to. And so it is up to us to break down these walls of division, this demarcation that exists between us. And man, listen, the One Mic, One Voice show, man, that's what we're trying to do, brother. And I tell you what, man, this has been a great, great show.
All right, if you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email us dt@onemiconevoice.com or Mr. Michael Eric Owens @onemiconevoice.com. And we'd be glad to have you on our show just to talk about some of these things we've been talking about today and open up that conversation, man. So please get at us.
And our next show we have
Mr. Kareem Muhammad.
Absolutely.
We're talking about the Teachers Appreciation Foundation.
Man, I'm excited about that, man, because like I say, that is a smooth brother. And as always, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.